Pickleball.
Shout out Pickleball.
He was playing pickleball, and he said he got to his phone after the pickleball, and Mario Aliota was texting him frantically saying, "I need you. Call me back. Dwayne can't go. Dwayne can't go." And Estes called him, and Mario's like, "Dude, can you get on an 11 a.m. bird from Phoenix to Denver?" And Estes is like, "Yeah." He said he drove home quickly, grabbed a backpack, threw two pairs of underwear, two pairs of socks, said he was going to ride with the same jeans. And then I guess a polo shirt, and then just or maybe NBC would give him the polo. And he got hopped on a bird, landed in Denver. He said Denver's a pain because you got to take a 30-minute train to the baggage claim.
Ugh.
He goes, and then when you get your bag, you got to wait in a 40-minute line for the Uber.
I'm not a fan of any of that.
He goes, and then it's a 40-minute drive from the Denver airport to Denver.
Not a flipping fan. Yeah. I had to do that in Dallas too. Is take a stupid shuttle to my terminal. It's like.
So he gets to the park. He said Rizzo was even behind him.
Yeah.
Rizzo got the call, had to fly, and Rizzo walked in like 45 minutes for a first pitch. So it was all very hectic. And I was thinking as he was saying this, I'm like, does Sean know that when he flies home tomorrow, he's got to be with us?
He knows. He's a professional.
He is a pro.
He's a total pro.
He is a pro. And he called the Giants leading 3-2 in the eighth inning yesterday. And then Logan Webb got, the straw that broke the camel's back? Is Connor freaking Joe.
Connor Joe, look at that guy.
Connor Joe with the single that made Webb leave. They brought in Alvarez. Crone hits the homer.
Farhan's like, I told you guys. I told you so.
Well, no joke. Bagley did a piece on it saying Farhan would have done it differently in a different political climate. Like, he hadn't earned his stripes with
the fan base yet. People went nuts, yeah.
So he was running scared.
Yeah.
We had Bochy on going, I haven't even
met him. Yeah, yeah.
All right, connections been made with the man, the traveling man, from pickleball to backpacks. To grabbing a pair of socks, to doing two games in Denver.
Pickleball to Coors Field.
Do I imagine back home in Arizona? I don't know. Where is Sean Estes on the Uma
Guest
Line?
Let's find out.
Hey, Sean, welcome back to Murph and Mac. How are you, man?
Hey, guys. Trains, and automobiles. I'm back, though. Back in Arizona. I got back last night. Wasn't without some adventure, but I made it.
Did you make your pickleball game this morning?
No, they actually played this morning. I told them, I was like, I can't rally for that one. That was a rough 48 hours. Not rough, but, you know.
A little hectic.
Yeah, yeah.
Tiring.
A little hectic.
Yeah.
We were talking about that Denver airport, right? That played a role in the whole thing, right?
Well, yeah. Have you been to Denver airport?
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it's not the easiest place. You need to give yourself a little bit of time to get there. Fortunately, I had some time on the way there, and I had time on the way home. But on the way there, it was great. Everything was pretty smooth. But, you know, there's A, B, and C terminals. The C terminal is about as far away from the baggage claim as you can get, but you have to take a train. To wait for the train, it's got to stop a couple times. And then when you get the baggage claim, you got to walk another half a mile to get to the island where the ship. So for Joe Rizzo, probably a little bit more stressful than it was for me because I had an earlier flight. But he didn't land until, I think, just after 4 o'clock, right during rush hour. And if anybody's seen Denver, if you've seen Denver traffic in the past 10 years.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Has it gotten worse?
So, it's not good.
Okay, I bet. No, yeah, yeah.
He was from the airport. And then yesterday, I mean, the game ends, of course, the game ends right around, you know, 3 hours. Actually, it was an under 3 hour game yesterday, which it's very surprising in Coors Field.
Yeah.
Not necessarily when Logan Webb pitches. He pitches, throws some pretty quick games. On average, but you know, you get out of there around 4:30, and then that's just when all the traffic hits. So it's a good hour plus to the airport. So yeah, it's not the most convenient place, but they put the airport out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's a huge airport, beautiful airport, but yeah, it's not the most convenient place to get to.
But you made it and you did the call and you got at least one win in, and then Logan Webb pitched well yesterday. That was my big takeaway. I mean, yeah, I know they lost the game. CJ Crone, you know, he's having a great year. Hit 10 balls. He hits home runs. He has a 30 home run year on his ledger. He's got a 28 home run year on his ledger. It's what he does. But on Webb, that was big for Logan Webb, I thought. I know he gives up the leadoff homer, and you're thinking, here we go again, right? And instead, he goes 7+, 4 hits, 2 walks. I mean, Sean, that at Colorado, you almost want to give the guy a medal, you know?
He was so good. I mean, I would say struggled in the first. I think he just made some mistakes in the first inning, and that's typically the inning, especially if you're a sinker ball guy where you're going to have some troubles. You're going to, you know, elevate some balls just based on adrenaline. You know, he missed a spot to Blackman. He had him 0-2 to lead the game off, and then he yanked a changeup down and in, and Blackman just, you know, got the barrel to it and kind of his wheelhouse. But you know, he settled down. He made a pitch to Brendan Rodgers that left it up and he hit it well to right field. And I think Yaz, you know, Yaz is one of the best out in right field. I mean, he had one of the highest defensive runs saved last year in the outfield. He's a great outfielder. But Coors Field, if you don't play there a lot, and this is the first time that the club's been in there this year, it can mess with your head because, you know, some of those balls off the bat where normally if you're playing in a different outfield, or if you're playing at home for that matter, you know exactly where to go. You know, line drive off the bat, you know where the ball's going to end up. You have a pretty good idea at least. But in Coors Field, you don't really know. You don't know how much it's going to carry. And I think you almost think it's going to carry. You know it's going to carry, but it carries more than you think it's going to carry. So that ball to right field, he just took he kind of came in on the ball and kind of banana route to it. And if he had gone straight back on that ball, it would have been caught. And Logan had only given up one in the first inning. Not that it would have made a difference maybe in the whole scheme of things, but he would only given up one run in that first inning. And then after the first inning, second, third inning, he started to figure it out. He started to dial in, you know, his changeup. His slider was nasty again. It started dotting his sinker. Then he had three pitches working for him the rest of the game. And there were six innings. He gave up a hit. I mean, not a hit. I mean, that just doesn't happen there. And he was efficient. He was throwing, you know, 10 to 12 pitches an inning. Yeah, it was as good. And I kind of was hoping, and I said it before the game, that maybe this is the game, and I know it's a tough place for this to happen at Coors Field, where everything kind of comes together for him. Because he's pitched well enough to win games this year. He's 5-1 coming in the game, and his ERA is just over 3. You know, so he's pitched pretty well, getting pretty good results. But you still haven't felt like that Logan's, like, dialed in like he was last year when he was on his dominant run, where he had all three pitches, it seemed like, every time he took the mound. And you're waiting for it because he had a slider one game, he's had his changeup, he's had his sinker. He's just been a little bit kind of erratic at times. And in the process, you know, he's been okay. He's gotten great results. And he can get away with that stuff because he has so much movement. But when he puts it together with the movement and the location, what you get is what you got second through the seventh inning yesterday against the Rockies, where he just absolutely shoved for 7 innings. So, yeah, that was fun to watch. And then, you know, Cap was trying to stay away from some of his higher leverage guys because they've been used a lot. And Jose Alvarez, man, he has been really good this year. I mean, he's been good for a couple years now. And in those situations especially, comes in with runners on base. And, you know, they pinch hit Connor Joe to get the hit off of Webb, and then they flip the lineup and you got Blackman. And you're just thinking that Alvarez is going to come in and get a ground ball double play, or he's going to get a couple strikeouts and get out of the inning. But, you know, he hadn't pitched in a week, so he's a little rusty, and he makes a mistake to Crone on a changeup, and Crone deposits it's about 450 feet out in left field, and that was it, you know, and the streak is over for the Giants. They beat him 12 straight games. So it was bound to end. It was bound to end. It's just unfortunate because they wasted a pretty good start by Logan.
Yeah, for sure. But great breakdown on Webb. And by the way, pitching into the eighth inning in Denver, as Kapler says, is a big deal. And so congratulations to him. And the Giants need that, man. It's going to be great to get him back. Him and Rodon go 1-2, I think. And into this weekend here, Sean, look into this weekend and this week. I mean, I know we're not even at Memorial Day yet. We're getting close, but you know, things are starting to take shape in terms of baseball as to which teams are separating themselves and identifying themselves. And here come three against the Padres, who are ahead of them in the standings, although the Padres played this morning in Philadelphia. And then the Mets, who, by the way, got a scare with Max Scherzer last night. He had to leave the game with a discomfort. But anyway, what a week, you know, for the Giants in terms of, like, what you're looking for. This is time to start throwing some punches with the guys that, listen, it's only May, but I'm possible October foes, you know?
You got it. I mean, you're right. You're getting into the time of the year where, you know, you've played a month plus, you know, you've played some good teams, you've played some bad teams, you know, you played good baseball, you haven't been healthy, now you're healthy, you got everybody back, you know, with the exception of DeSclafani, but, you know, Junis is throwing the ball well in the rotation, so you haven't missed DeSclafani terribly, but you know, yeah, you're getting healthy offensively, and now you see how you measure up against two of the best teams in the major leagues. Pitching galore for both teams. I mean, you're never gonna get a starter where you're never gonna get an average starter of these next six games. I mean, what the Mets and the Padres are throwing out there is quality arms, and guys that can dominate games. So, yeah, I think it'll be a good test for this club. And, you know, they haven't played great against the really good teams or the teams that we figure will be pretty good this year. I mean, the Mets took 3 out of 4 from them, you know, at Citi Field, you know, a month ago. The Cardinals are a good team. You know, they didn't fare too well against the Cardinals. I think they were 3 and 4 against the Cardinals in their 7 games. You know, they've been competitive, but you know, you're going to have to beat the good teams eventually, right? So they're going to get a really nice test here in the next in the 6 or 7 games.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
Yeah, for sure, man. And by the way, circling back to Coors Field for just a second, I would. You mentioned about the 4-inning stretch that Webb had where he mowed guys down. I remain, this is one of my bar trivia things, that I think one of the greatest athletic feats of our lifetime is Hideo Nomo throwing a no-hitter in Coors Field. You with me?
Unbelievable.
You with me?
Unbelievable. I would say one of the top pitching performances of all time.
Okay,
and he did it against that old lineup. Remember how good that old lineup was?
The Blake Street Bombers, right?
The Blake Street Bombers. I mean, doing it against them in Coors Field. Are you kidding? And here's the reason why I think it's even more. You know, I think it's why it's more impressive is that he threw a split finger. He threw fastball split. He wasn't a high-velocity guy either. He was, you know, 90 to 92, threw the fastball where he wanted to. He came straight over the top, and, you know, he was one of those guys, you know, that threw the ball up in the zone, and like guys do now, he was one of those guys that was able to do that back then and get a lot of swing and misses up there and a lot of pop-ups. But the split, and we saw it the other night with Alex Cobb, Alex Cobb pretty much just put it in his back pocket the other night because he realized probably in the bullpen it wasn't working the way he likes it to. He wasn't getting the same movement, the same depth that he normally does at sea level. He threw a couple of them early in the game and it just weren't good. There wasn't a lot of movement to him. So he went fastball, knuckle, curve, and that was it. Well, Hideo, that's all he had was a fastball and a split. And to have his split working the way it did, that day against that team, against that lineup, and to be able to go out there and throw a no-hitter, I mean, that's unbelievable. It really is. I can't remember how many pitches he did it on. It didn't really matter back then how many pitches it took. If you had a no-hitter, you were still – if you had a no-hitter for 6 and you had 120 pitches, you were still going out for the 7th, put it that way. So, that was unbelievable. But like I'm saying, like even just to not give up a hit for 6 innings, is pretty awesome. But what Logan Webb did yesterday.
Yeah, it's a
bit, yeah,
for people.
Hideo, by the way, yeah. not to pat myself on the back, but
yeah.
That's why I got my first big league win against him and my first big league hit in the same game against Hideo Nomo.
Nice.
But he did break my bat on the hit, and I still have the bat. It's broken, but it's signed.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Wait, give me the location again and the situation.
Dodger Stadium, right after the All-Star break, 1996. I faced him in Dodger Stadium. I think it was the second game after the All-Star break in 96, maybe third. I just got called up again because I made my debut in 95, made 3 starts, didn't make the club out of spring training in 96, and then at the All-Star break, they called me up. I was actually on my way to the AAA All-Star game, and I had to reroute. Go to LA, which I was very happy to do.
Yeah.
So cool. By the way, he's talking about firsts. I don't know if you look around the bigs, and this some kid for the Pirates last night, Jack Sawinski, who's from Chicago, hit his first ever home run, and his dad was in the crowd crying and all that. And just like, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Baseball, like, basketball's cool, football's cool. You just get these moments in baseball that are different. I don't know if your mom and dad ever had a moment in the stands, or you ever had a moment in the stands with your mom and dad? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, well, not in the big leagues, but yeah. And my mom and dad, I made my debut in Pittsburgh '95, and so they weren't able to make it. But then I came home and I pitched against the Padres, I believe, and they were all there. And I wasn't sure what was going on in the stands. I was pretty focused on pitching. But, yeah, after the game was pretty special. I mean, we lost the game, so I wasn't really pumped about it. But but I definitely remember having a moment with them. And my dad grew up a Giant fan, and my high school baseball coach was there, and he was a huge Willie Mays fan. He grew up in Antioch. So everybody was super excited when I got traded to the Giants from Seattle. And then I was able to pitch in Candlestick for the first time. So, yeah, it was pretty emotional for them. But talk about emotional, man! My kid and I got emotional on Saturday night, man. I didn't expect that.
Well,
that was his last game as a high school. Well, he probably won't play in college. He's not planning on it anyway. So he's a kid that I coached for 5 years in club ball and just got to see him mature and become a pretty good baseball player and just a better person and teammate. So it was it for him Saturday night. So. Him and I got pretty emotional after the game. I didn't expect him to be that way, but when he did it, it got me teary. So that was it for him.
I follow that stuff, and we were talking about it to you for weeks, and I looked up right before the conversation. I saw the tough news that Hamilton got you guys. Hey, man, great run, first of all. And listen, you go that deep, one team's got to win, right? Only one team ends happy. But it's really cool that you, A, got to be there for as much of it as you could, and then, B, to have that little moment where you guys realized how many memories you guys packed into that run, huh?
Yeah, I know, you got it. It was unfortunate. Just, I told you guys a story last week about how Hamilton got in, but they were the best team in the state all year, one of the best teams in the country, and you just knew it was going to be a tough task beating them twice out of, that they had to play them three times total in the tournament. They played great Saturday night. They only lost 3-1 and they out hit them. I mean, they really did. Their left fielder made some unbelievable plays to save the game. I mean, he robs a couple doubles off the wall. They wouldn't have been home runs, but he had to go up and get them, and he made a catch coming in on the ball and doubled off a guy at second. I mean, it was just an amazing defensive performance from their left fielder. And that was the difference in the game, in a close game like that. And then of course on Tuesday night, they went and rolled Chandler High School in the finals. They run rolled them, so they were, you knew that as soon as that Shap, they took Shap down, that Chaparral, I mean, that they took them down, they were going to win it all. But needless to say, the kids fought their butts off, and they got a lot to be proud of for sure. But yeah, I did. I was glad I was able to have that moment with him, and then he made all region team, so we were able to have a banquet for him on Monday night. And was there for that. Paul Konerko actually spoke at it because he was a Chaparral High graduate. So that was kind of fun for the kids.
That's really cool. All region. Congratulations. Yeah. Did he think about going to a smaller school to play, or, maybe if he wasn't getting nibbles from the big schools?
That's a good question, because I think a lot of kids come to that point, in their high school career where, you're not getting your door knocked down by D1 schools, like big D1 schools, where had that been the case, he would have played, right? Like, so say a UCLA or a Texas or a Vanderbilt, right? If they're heavily recruiting my son, there's no question he would continue to play in college because of the school too, right? Because of the quality of the school and the size of the school and the whole college experience. He didn't want to sacrifice that big school experience to play baseball. So I guess that's what it really comes down to. And a lot of kids, they'll just say, could be in football, baseball, basketball, whatever sport it might be, they just want to continue their athletic career no matter where it is. They just want to, they just love the game, right? They just want to go and they want to go to school. They want to play baseball, or they want to play basketball. But he said, I don't want to play it bad enough to sacrifice going to a big school and enjoying that college experience, social experience, athletic experience, doing it for the fraternity thing. So, he had that mindset going into his senior year. So he said, if I have a really good senior year and all of a sudden I'm being recruited by a UCLA, then so be it. Then I'd go that route. But it didn't happen. He could play. He could play college baseball. He probably could play at a lower end D1 school, a smaller school. But he just he wanted the big college experience. And
yeah, that's
you
awesome.
Know what? I'm proud that he's mature enough to make that decision.
Yeah, this is the time of life where you're 18. He makes that. This is the time, Sean. They got to let these birds fly, and they got to go do what's best for them and be happy, and you be proud of them making those decisions. I'll tell you this. As a guy who went to UCLA, and I was a, you know, sub-mediocre high school athlete in basketball and baseball, but I played intramurals when I got there, and there's a few fraternities at these big colleges like a UCLA of kids like your son. His name's Jackson, right?
Yep.
So Jackson Estes will join this like fraternity with a bunch of other dudes who could have played D1 but kind of decided not to. And let me tell you what, when you draw those guys in the softball IM, that's a tough draw. Because those guys, I played those guys. They were hitting bombs and just hosing guys out from deep outfield. You're like, damn, this guy should be playing D1. What's he doing out here on a Thursday afternoon on the IM field kicking my ass? But so Jackson's got some championships in his future. I'll say that.
Yeah, he could definitely go that route if he wanted to, right? I mean, he was at SMU, was another school he was really looking hard at. They don't have a baseball program, but they have club baseball. And I was like, you absolutely could play club ball at SMU if that's right. If you got the bug to play, and then he decided to go to Alabama, they don't have that. But
oh, is he going to Bama?
He's going to Bama.
Oh, yeah. Are we going to get a little Sean Estes, Nick Saban elbow rubbing time on the sidelines there?
Going to see you
absolutely.
On the.
I'll be all about Roll Tide next year when we're talking. You know what? It'd probably be more like in September. You know when we.
That's right. We still be talking. We'll still be talking. Yeah. Hey, Saban's in the news too. He went after A&M. You're gonna have to get up, bone up on your Saban.
He went after A&M?
Yeah, because the new name, image, and likeness now, you can quote-unquote offer a player a hookup with like a Cadillac dealership or whatever, and A&M just went all in and hooked all these players up with all these money deals, and Saban's a couple of things. He's like distraught that this is the new landscape, and he's also pissed that he lost all these players, so he said Jimbo bought his entire recruiting class.
Watch
now,
out, man.
There's a whole war of words now.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because I got a little bit of inside knowledge about this. And I don't know if this matters, but so the kid that Jackson went out to Alabama with, so when Jackson went to visit the school, he went with a kid from his high school who's been recruited by Alabama for football. So, you know, that's pretty much why he's going to Alabama is because they rolled out the red carpet for this kid, but he got to see firsthand like the whole inside. He was at Saban's office and everything. So this kid decides he's being recruited by A&M as well. Well, where does the kid end up going? He goes to A&M.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, Anthony Lucas is the kid's name. He's a DN. He's a stud, right? He's already at A&M right now, you know, with the club practicing. But Jackson the other day, you know, he's like, I got to go pick up Anthony. This is the kid from A&M. I got to pick up Anthony and take him somewhere. I'm like, well, what are you show your chauffeur now? He's like, yeah, Dad, he's buying me dinners and lunches. And he's paying for everything.
Yes.
He's like, cause, you know what I mean?
Because so, Jimbo I mean, hooked him up. Oh, my gosh.
But they can do that now.
Yes,
now
he can.
It's legal.
Yeah, he
wow.
can.
Yeah.
It's absolutely legal. So, you know, this kid's coming back from A&M, and he's, you know, he's sitting on a pretty fat wallet right now to hooking up his buddies. I think it's great.
What a story. This kid must be a hell of a player, by the way, if A&M and Bama are recruiting him. Jeez.
Yeah, he was one of the top DNs in the country. That he's going to be good. And I think that was the thing about A&M, too, is that Jimbo told him he'll end up playing his freshman year.
Wow.
I think Saban said that, you know, you're more likely going to have – There's 10 kids like him.
I tell you, man,
they're there.
So as a Pac-12 guy, how does Arizona State let this kid out of their grasp? Come on, man. Come on, Herm.
They don't get anybody. It's crazy. They don't get any locals. U of A or ASU. Yeah. No local kids are coming. I mean, they're heavily recruiting, you know, like SEC schools and, you know, Big 12. I mean, they have some really good quarterbacks that have come out of here. You know, Spencer Rattler and there was a kid that was going to Michigan that ended up, you know, he ended up not being able to play because he had a health issue. He went to Ohio State but didn't play. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been some really good quarterbacks in this. Perry kids, the Purdy kids went to Iowa. It's crazy that, I mean, the ASU's right in their backyard, and Herm Edwards, I mean, good recruiter. I mean, they just can't get any of these local kids.
The Pac-12 is struggling right now, man. Oh, man, I could talk to you about this all day. Hey, by the way, that kid Brock Purdy you're mentioning is a 49er. The Niners drafted him.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a local. He went to Perry High School, and his dad, Sean Purdy, I played with in Double A, Shreveport, the Giants.
Yeah, no, Niners drafted him in the seventh round, man. He's on him and Trey and Jimmy will be hanging out. We'll see how that goes.
Right on for him. Hey, by the way, Murph, you got a kid coming in a couple of years to UCLA that goes to Hamilton right now. It's an absolute beast. He might not get there, though. He'd probably be drafted pretty high.
That's what happens.
Ronk Chalowski, remember
Wait, what was his
great
name?
Great name. Sounds like he should have played in the 40s.
What was his name again? Yeah.
Right? Ronk Chalowski.
Ronk, bro.
He's a junior this year, but he's starting shortstop for Hamilton. Yeah, R-O-C-H Chalowski.
I mean, he had to be a ball player. He had no choice.
Yeah. It's a great name, isn't it?
Oh, it's phenomenal.
And he can play, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, here he is, Ronk Chalowski. I just found him. Hamilton High School. He was part of that loaded Hamilton team. Yeah. Oh, I see him.
Yeah, Oregon State commit. So, UCLA commit. Sorry.
He also played quarterback, it says.
Yeah, he'll be the quarterback next year.
Oh, my God. All right. Good. Hey, we could do it all day, man. I follow, as there's a great scene in the movie Training Day where Ethan Hawke and Denzel Washington go to interview Scott Glenn, who's he recognizes Ethan Hawke. He goes, "You used to play DB at North Hollywood High, huh?" And Hawke goes, "How'd you know?" And he goes, "I follow all the good players."
That's Murph.
Paulie has that quote for me.
Yeah.
Because we could do a podcast, Sean, just on all the prep activity in the greater Phoenix
country
area.
Yeah,
I'm down with it, baby.
I'm all about it.
He's going to be
a kid that's in high school, too, next year, so I'll be all in.
Well, yeah. Paulie wants me to launch my podcast called I Follow All the Good Players, and then I'll have you on as a guest. You'll be my Arizona guy.
It's a great name for a podcast, too.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah.
All right, Sean. Hey, by the way, just to be sure, you have a younger. You can do this again next year, right? You can ramp up the emotions because you got a little guy too, right?
Yeah. Well, I got a junior, so he'll play next year. He'll be a senior. You know, he'll start in the outfield next year, so
we'll be
he'll be able to ride back. So they have a good team coming back next year too.
We'll fast forward this conversation into May of 2023. In the meantime, we'll get ready for the Giants and Padres, Giants and Mets, and we'll let you go, man. It's been a little hectic for you. You go take care of your house and your making sure you got your toothbrush and all that, and then we'll talk to you down the road, Sean. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, fellas. Yeah.
There he is.
See you later, man.
Great Sean Estes, man.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.